Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mitch Gourley, 10 years of volunteer and career experience, firefighter first class for a department northwest of Toronto. Mitch is a third generation firefighter. The day he was born, his father was in recruit training being taught by his father about all aspects of the job, so it was inevitable that Mitch would follow suit. His mindset and how he operates being the best version of himself sets him apart from the ordinary firefighter. Being aggressive, physically fit, caring for one another, and how he trains other firefighters is a must here because it resounded with me. Performing well on the fire ground is a must, but without formulating a sharp mind behind it can only take you so far. With that, I present Mr. Mitch Gourley.
Hey guys, my name is Mitch Gourley. I got in the fire service. One of the jokes I kind of say is I didn't really have a choice. My dad was a 27-year firefighter with a big city here in Ontario, Canada. And his dad before him. And one of the funny stories I tell is my dad actually missed my birth because he was in recruit training with his dad as his training officer. So there's this really good picture I can send you, Danny, of like my dad holding me in his gear. I mean, knowing what we know about gear now, probably wasn't the best to be holding a newborn baby in his hands. But I kind of say that the first sort of fabric my skin touched was bunker gear. So I didn't really have a choice. And I think it was one of those things, whether it was visiting my dad at work or, you know, seeing him at work, the fire service or becoming a firefighter was always at like the forefront of my brain. And, you know, the way it worked out is here we are, you know, 10 years later as a firefighter and enjoying every minute of it.
Okay. So technically you are a third generation firefighter.
Yes, sir. So yeah, my dad's dad was a training officer for a large city in Ontario. And then my dad became a firefighter for that department. So it was pretty cool. Like I said, my dad's training officer was his dad. So he literally called him Captain Dad. So yeah, it was pretty neat. There's some awesome pictures of my dad and his father on the training ground. And it's been pretty neat as the years progressed. I had the opportunity to work alongside my dad as a firefighter when we were both volunteers. So we got some pretty cool photos. Me and my dad got to go interior in a couple fires. So we got something that a lot of father-son pairs don't have is that we've actually fought a fire together. So it's pretty neat. And it's, you know, something that has been special with our relationship.
No, I would say so. There's something, you know, that bond, like most, I'm assuming most fathers and sons have something in common that, you know, like the dad always wants to kind of bring the son into, whether it's hunting or hiking, whatever the case may be. But the fact that both of you are into the fire service together, like there's no better bond than that. And the fact that you actually got to run calls and fight fires together is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the one thing that was nice about my dad is he never pushed me into the career. I think he was one of those, you know, one of those guys that was just like, he told me how great it was. I got to see firsthand. Like, you know, I always say my dad was at every single hockey game when I played because the shift worked allowed. Like he was working nights, which, you know, wasn't ideal, but, you know, it allowed him to, you know, be a big factor, participate a lot more in my life, you know, even just growing up. So I got to see a lot of the, you know, benefits of being a firefighter outside of just the career itself. So I think it was one of those things. Yeah, it was never really, you know, forced upon me, but I kind of by proxy just got to see how great it was. And you know, the cards just kind of fell into place.
Okay. Now, with that being said, when did you decide, like, hey, this is what I want to do? And did you go tell your dad? And what were the next steps?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, as any young kid, I feel like it was always something that I, you know, I thought I wanted to do. But, you know, when you're going through high school and your buddies are going to university and, you know, I think I wanted to go to university for all the wrong reasons. So I remember I had the grades to go to university, but I was also applying to colleges. And, you know, I was actually about to sleep in for going, like I had to go write basically an entry exam to get into the college that I wanted to for firefighting. And I was going to sleep in. I was like, you know, my mom was bugging me, get up. And I finally ended up, you know, getting out of bed and going to write this exam. And it was, you know, the best decision I've ever made. It's so interesting to see how the course of my life would have been different if I didn't wake up and I didn't go to that exam. Because like I said, I think I wanted to go to university to like have fun with my buddies and have a good time. But ultimately, like taking the fire service route, it is, you know, set me up. Everything I have, you know, today is thanks to the fire service. You know, even, you know, the friends I've made, the bonds I've made, you know, a lot of that has come from, you know, things that I've gained through work. So it was kind of, you know, the universe, you know, kind of forced me in that direction. And I'm so glad it did, because yeah, this job has done so much for me.
Okay. So you started out as a volunteer. When did you know, like, hey, if I'm doing this as a volunteer, like I definitely want to do this career-wise? And once that notion came into your head, did you apply for many departments, or was there one in particular you wanted?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was a volunteer, I was like, I knew it was something I wanted to do. It was like, I never really knew what the job was going to be like until you started doing it. Like, you know, I had this idea, like I said, seeing my father, all that kind of stuff. I was like, oh, it looks like a great thing. But being a guy who is, you know, came from playing team sports, was physically active, you know, likes to make a difference, likes to help people. When I started actually doing the job, it just felt right. Like it just resonated with me. And that's when I truly knew, I'm like, man, I want to do this full time. I want to make this my job, because no one was beating me to the truck. Like we worked on a paid on call system. So like first come, first serve, basically, if you're getting on the first truck, you're going. And, you know, whether I had to run, ride my bike, I would have swam to the station if I had to. I did what I had to do because I just loved going on fire calls. And yeah, that was kind of when I really knew that, you know, it was something that I wanted to do. So from there, you know, basically started applying right away. At 18 years old, you know, I had a lot of people naysayers saying, don't even bother, you're too young, you're too young. But I was like, you know, it's worth a shot. If anything, it's reps. So when, you know, my ideal department does come up, at least I've had the opportunity to write the exams and do the interviews. So I know at least where I'm at in Ontario, it's like, you know, beggars can't be choosers. Like the getting into the fire service is such a competitive job that you basically apply anywhere within like 2 to 3 hours of where you're at, because a lot of the departments work 24-hour shifts, meaning, you know, even if you are 2, 3 hours away, you could potentially drive on shift because you're not going in every single day. So I just kind of was shooting at the hip. You know, like I said, I was just having that mentality of it's just reps, it's just reps. I would say for sure my dad worked for the city of Toronto. That's one of the biggest departments in Canada. You know, it was an hour away from where I grew up. So that was like the FDNY of Canada. That's kind of where I wanted to work. It was like, you know, Toronto's the big smoke. Like that's kind of where I wanted to end up. So yeah, that was kind of in my mind. That's where I wanted to end up. But, you know, like it just didn't work out that way. And I'm so, so happy with the department that I'm with now. And it's funny because the testing kind of changed for getting hired as a firefighter in Canada right around the time that I started applying. So Toronto was one of the very first cities to use this new sort of testing method. And the city that I ended up getting hired with was the second. So it's funny how like my desire to be on with Toronto, I think, is the reason that I got hired with the department I'm in now, because it was new and not a lot of people had got it yet. So me like having done it right off the get-go, I think kind of put me in a really good position to get hired with the department that I'm with now. So again, everything happens for a reason. I'm really happy where I'm at. And yeah, it would have been cool to, you know, because the one thing in Toronto, I believe, if I'm correct, if you get on, you can actually take your father or your mother's number when they retire. So that would have been pretty cool too, to like assume my dad's like, you know, badge number and stuff. But like I said, it just didn't work out that way, but it's all good.
No, I 100% agree with you. Everything happens for a reason, even though we might not understand why. It's not really our job to, and we just gotta, like what I say, like roll with the punches, you know, whatever comes to you, whatever road path. I mean, there's certain things you can decide, but ultimately your path is written, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I 100% understand, you know, 100% get you on that.
For sure. And one thing, like, you know, to kind of add on to that, and, you know, I'm not a wise old man, but I'm definitely wiser than I was when I was 18, you know, not only do I feel like the universe or, you know, there's sort of a path that's laid out for you. I think one of the things that I've really learned is like failure, struggle, man, that is life's greatest gift. Cause when I was younger, it was like, man, like, you know, when things aren't going your way, you're beating yourself up. Why me? Why me? But, you know, as we get older, we realize that a lot of times when we fall or when one door closes, another one opens. And, you know, now I almost embrace failure. I embrace change because I think it's just, like you said, it's that really nuanced, weird way of, you know, the world just sort of pushing you on the path that you're intended on. So, yeah, I love that kind of that idea. And I think it's so true that everyone kind of has a destiny and we just got to be willing to let go and be along for the ride.
Definitely. Definitely. With that being said, so you get on to your department, you know, they accept you. I'm assuming you had to do like a rookie school, correct?
Yeah. So I know, again, it's kind of different, United States versus Canada. So usually the way it works in Canada is you'll go get your basically fire certification somewhere before you join a department. So you basically get your seals or your certifications. And then when you actually, that's basically your ticket to apply. You basically need those as minimum qualifications. And then when you get on with the department, they'll do like their recruit training. So they'll basically take these pre-qualified candidates and then they'll take them through, you know, this is how we do it for this city. This is how we run our high-rise protocol. These are our hose loads, you know. So you basically have this base knowledge and then they basically kind of mold you into what they want their firefighters to look like. So yeah, that was kind of basically the way it worked for me is I had gotten all my minimum qualifications. And then I got hired with the department. And then once you get hired, you kind of start this recruit training with the other recruits to learn the way of the department you're working with.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a little different, but it's still kind of all the same. So with that being said, when you got your first assignment, your first station, first crew, how was that like for you?
All the first couple of years, you know, the way my department works is you're kind of filling in a lot. So you're moving all over the place, okay. Different stations. You're basically, you know, it takes a while to get that seniority to basically have a hall where you bid to, and then you stay there. So I'll kind of, I'll answer that question with the first station that, I was actually stationed at, because, that was a real pivotal, moment in my career. And I think was, you know, has really set me up for success and, you know, put me where I'm at today to have that intention and that approach to the job. Cause I was fortunate to have an officer that, you know, the guy wanted to train, he prioritized physical fitness. He wanted to go to fires. And I had a couple really good senior firefighters that just wanted to do everything in their ability to, you know, build me up and allow me to learn. So yeah, they basically took like this new firefighter who had a lot of, you know, ambition and drive and desire, and then just kind of hone those skills. And, you know, I could really tell that they were in my corner and wanted me to succeed. So it went a long way. And like I said, I think it really set me up for success. And I can't, you know, being on the job full time now, 8.5 years, I can't tell you how awesome it is when, you know, you're in the back with someone that, like, if something's coming in that day, they want to be there and they've prepared themselves, whether it's physically or with the skills that, like, you know, whatever we get today, we're good to go. And yeah, having an officer that, like, you know, he's going to get you out of the truck. He wants you in, you know, like, you know, eyeshot of command, because he's the guy that, like, if there's a task that needs to be done, he wants his crew going in there. So I think, you know, that was huge in the beginning of my career. And, is definitely something that, you know, I've held with me. And, you know, when that day comes, it's still a ways away, but when that day comes, you know, to be an officer, there's definitely a lot of characteristics that I want to emulate that my first captain had, because it was a huge positive in my career. And even now, kind of getting to the point where, you know, being a more senior firefighter and having new recruits start, I saw a lot of people, or at least the guys that I was working with, kind of, you know, show me what it meant to be a good senior firefighter, a good role model. So, you know, I try my best to lead, you know, lead from the front and kind of have that same approach. Yeah, that was a huge part of, you know, kind of starting my career out on the right foot.
Okay. I do kind of like that aspect that your department does, where once you're once you're on, you rotate to wherever you're needed. That way you also get the experience of different stations, different geographics, different type of calls. Cause you know, not every single station's area is the same. So I think that also will help the newer candidate learn the different parts and roles of the department. So I actually like that aspect that's what you guys do.
For sure. No, I couldn't agree more. Like you said, like, you know, some places will be heavy with like old age homes and stuff like that. So you're running a ton of medicals, which, you know, I know guys always joke that they don't love going to medical calls, but as a new firefighter, you know, that's one thing, that's one kind of area that you should be really strong in. So it's nice to have stations like that where you're getting your reps in from a, you know, medical standpoint. And then, like you said, you got different apparatus even you're working with different equipment. So I think it really keeps you on your toes as a newer firefighter. And I think one thing to kind of add to that, that's so important is, you know, meeting new firefighters, that camaraderie aspect of like not just working with the same crew, to get to be able to meet all these people, you know, and to learn from them, because everyone kind of does, you know, things a little bit different. That first captain I mentioned, his famous saying was, there's 100 ways to skin a cat. So I think everyone has different approaches to how they do things. So it's really good to work with different personnel for that reason as well, because, you know, as a new person, 2 years, one mouth, be a sponge, learn as much as you can, take it with a grain of salt, put it in your toolbox and kind of keep moving. So yeah, it's, I really do like that aspect, you know, for those reasons, for sure.
Okay. With that being said, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
I think, you know, that's one of the words that's definitely been like misconstrued in mainstream. I think a lot of people, you know, think being aggressive, like what comes to mind is like when people, you know, these guys are cowboys, they're just going in without thought. Like, I think that's kind of how people perceive aggressive, as being careless. To me, aggressive means like, you know, things like just approaching everything you do with a sense of intentionality and purpose. You know, let's use the example of, I don't want to drive like a bat out of hell to the 87-year-old difficulty breathing that we've been to 10 times that month, but me driving with purpose and intentionality on that call to get those reps in, like we mentioned, means when that 8-year-old unconscious comes in, I know how the truck operates. I know, you know, what its limits are. So I think aggressive means like utilizing your skills and, you know, practicing like you play. So ultimately, like, yeah, maybe there's no one in that house, you know, maybe it would be deemed as foolish or unnecessary to make an aggressive push in through the front door. But ultimately, when that next call comes in and I know that there's someone trapped in that bedroom, and the last three fires we went through, you know, we approached it with that same intent, you know, and purpose, that when that call comes in, you know, we've done it before. So I think being aggressive means just utilizing your skill set. So when, you know, when the bell rings and we really need to prove that we know what we're doing, because we're going to be tested based on that call type. That's kind of what aggressive means to me.
I do like that answer. And I'm just like picturing, so I've never been to Canada. I would like to go at some point. Because I am, and I'm sure you're going to know who this individual is, I am a huge Drake fan. Yep. So, you know, at some point, the bucket list is, you know, go to Toronto just to see what I only see on TV. But with that being said, I'm not sure how the building construction is, if it's kind of similar to the States here, but is it safe to assume that there are some aggressive fire departments in Canada that will, what we call, make the push on a fire and try to get a grab?
For sure. Yeah. I think, you know, in my world, like, unless it's deemed that, you know, it's unsafe to make entry, like, we're going to make entry. You know, I think my department is really good on trying to like be on the cutting edge of, you know, whatever NIST and NIOSH is saying, from like actual, you know, it's backed by science too. So we aren't just doing things because it's the way it's always been done. I think a lot of things are backed with science, which is important. And, you know, again, that just comes down to, like you said, knowing your district. Like, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the homes in my area and the city I work are wartime homes that, you know, they got traditional building construction with like 2x10 joists and these, you know, big rubble basements. Like, these things could probably be on fire for 60 minutes and you could, you know, drive a truck on them, where We do have also those homes now. We've got lightweight engineered trussing, and you know, just knowing when it doesn't make sense to be aggressive, like you said. I think aggressive is just this term that, you know, people have just thrown out there. I think we can be aggressive if we have the correct knowledge. I think knowledge is power. So yeah, knowing things like, you know, building construction, all that kind of stuff, and to be able to make an educated and informed decision, that really determines whether you can be aggressive or not. Because if you're just going in blind and not thinking about all those other things, then I think you can really get yourself in a pickle.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. All right. Just for my personal wanting to know, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. What kind of air packs do you guys wear?
So we have the Scott. I think they're the I can't remember the actual brand. I think they're not their most recent gen of packs, but the generation before.
Okay.
I think like the SC3000s or whatever. I'm not really good at knowing all the names of stuff, but yeah, we got the nice, you know, ergonomic, lightweight frames with fiberglass bottles.
Okay.
Even our officers have the Scott Sight built into their mask. So they got that little thermal imager, which, you know, kind of debate is still out whether or not they love it or not, just because it is so small. But yeah, again, like I said, I'm very fortunate. The department that I work in has always wanted to be on that like cutting edge. And we've had a lot of, you know, things when they first came out, which, you know, can sometimes bite in the butt, because right, usually the first generation of things doesn't work too well. But yeah, we're pretty darn fortunate with the, you know, the equipment committees and the truck committees we have, that they make sure that we're kitted out with, you know, the best PPE and, you know, some really good equipment. So really fortunate in that respect.
Okay. That's pretty cool. You said all the officers have that heads up display.
Yeah. So all the acting captains, so as soon as you become an acting captain, as well as officers that are, you know, full-time captains, basically, I think it's just a retrofit that they can pop that thing into your mask. So yeah, it's pretty slick. Like, I mean, I've worn a couple of my captains just to kind of see what it's like. I'm the grunt on the back that usually has the big thing I hold in my hand that, you know, snaps onto my pack of the beaner, and that works great.
Right.
And it's funny too, like a lot of officers, like they just want to go old school, because having that big screen, you know, where they can kind of really see what's going on, I think they're a little bit more comfortable than having to kind of peek in the corner of their mask. But yeah, it's pretty wild. I always joke with all the kids that, you know, come see the trucks. And I think of like my dad and his generation and like the old brass fittings and like, you know, the old Hurst equipment where everything weighed a gazillion pounds. And now I'm showing the kids like the jaws that got the portable batteries, like the hydraulics, like, you know, technological advances has made my generation of firefighters' life a lot easier. So I definitely have that perspective too.
Right, right. No, you're right. And that's something, you know, I'm sure you've had conversations with your dad, like, hey, look, like it's integrated in the mask. And your dad's probably like, for real? Like it's always cool. Like I call them old heads, but I love talking to them because they will tell you how it was back in the day compared to what
for
you
sure
have now. And then they'll also be like, oh, you guys have it much easier than we did. This is how we had to figure out whatever the case may be. And you're like, just listening to it, like, that's just wild.
Yeah. Or just the thought that like a city would have like one SCBA, and if you wore it, you were like the laughing stock of the department.
Right. Right.
It's funny. Like, and I think there's so much to learn from that more old school kind of brand of firefighting. There's a lot of things that like, you know, doing overhaul without an SCBA. Yeah. We can probably leave that in like the history books, but I'll use an example of one of the, you know, fires I actually went in with my dad. Basement walkout, like 2 o'clock in the morning, pretty like it was basically it had self-vented out the back window, and we made the push kind of through like the entrance to the walkout. And I was so hopped up and so excited because I only been a volley for like a year at this point. I actually forgot to clip my regulator in. So I go in, take a huge huff into this black smoke, and then, you know, clip in whatever. And I'm looking at my dad. I can maybe see like just the visibility's poor, but you can maybe see like a foot off the ground. And all I see is my old man going in. He's not wearing his gloves. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, what the heck is this guy doing? So whatever, we go in, I, you know, again, being new, unprepared, I didn't bring any tools with me. So I had the tick, funny, speaking of the tick, my dad had basically put a knock on the fire and he wanted to perform hydraulic ventilation just to kind of clear things out. I didn't have a tool. So what I do, I broke the window with a tick, this $3,000 tick camera. So anyways, got the job done. And I remember coming out and being like, Dad, why weren't you wearing any gloves? And he's like, I wanted to see how hot it was. So like things like that were like, again, I probably wouldn't go into a fire now, especially like the areas we work with, needles, all that kind of stuff. But just like that kind of old school mentality of like having the experience and to be like calm enough to be like, okay, I'm going to push in a little here. I'm not going to maybe wear all my PPE just to see what we're dealing with. And then like the gloves did go on eventually. But yeah, it's so, so interesting to kind of just see like the way things used to be done. And, you know, call them cowboys, call them old school. Everyone has a, you know, a ton of knowledge to give. And, you know, like I said before, it's like, take everything with a grain of salt. I'm probably not going into a fire without my gloves on, but hey, pretty good point.
Okay. All right. And last personal question, what kind of hose loads does your department use?
So we have two, basically we refer to them as our speed lays, which is basically what we're going to pull 99% of the time. So it's a 200-foot Minuteman. Okay. One of them is a foam line, the other one's a straight water. So basically gives us the option, you know, you can pull the load off either end of the truck, but we basically got, you know, nozzle on one side versus the other. So depending on, you know, where, what side of the street the house is on, that's kind of what you're grabbing. And then we just have a 300-foot, the speed lays are 45 mil. So 1¾ inch for all my Americans out there. And then, our other kind of attack load, if you will, is just going to be a 300-foot flat lay. You know, getting Minuteman to my department took a while. So, you know, there's probably something we could do to better manage that hose. Like when you're dealing with long lines, 300, 400 feet, having them flat loaded isn't ideal. But I mean, if we got to like stretch, you know, in behind a house or whatever, then it's an option. But yeah, usually 95% of the time, you know, that 200-foot Minuteman is going to be what we're grabbing. And then we got a 100-foot, bumper line that's just flat loaded, on the bumper, just, you know, car, garbage, whatever it may be. So that's kind of what we're running for attack lines. We got some, obviously our supply hose, 4-inch 100 mil in the back. And then we got a dead load, 65 as well. That actually gets utilized, quite a bit just with the, we, especially in my area, we have a lot of like 2, 3, 4 story walk-ups that aren't sprinklered and don't have cabinets. So the need to run a horizontal standpipe is something that we do quite often. So having that dead load, that's usually the way that we'll get the water where we need it, and then just hook in from there.
Okay, that's awesome that, you know, you said Minuteman. I'm like, oh, like, and, you know, and I'm not trying to say like my bubble's like this, but I like talking to people outside of the United States. And so when I do, and I hear Minuteman, it's like, oh, but like you said, that wasn't an easy sell, I would imagine, right?
No, it's the, you know, the old saying, like 100 years of progress, uh-huh. 100 years of progress unimpeded by history, or 100, I can't remember the exact saying. I'm probably butchering that, but yeah, it's like, you know, we always did it this way. So why would we change it? And then, you know, you got these new guys coming through to be like, you know, hey, like this is how it works. And I think one of the things is like we can sit around the kitchen table and talk about it all day long, but until you actually start pulling lines and you can actually show a guy that's, you know, had the same hose load for the 20 years of his career, be like, look how much better this is. Look how much slicker this deployment is. And then they're like, okay, young guy, I guess you know, you got something here. So yeah, it's one of those things that it can be like pulling teeth. But I think ultimately, you know, it takes longer than we like, but, we do end up, you know, always progressing, it seems, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Our progress is always good, man. Especially, you know, fire service, we hate change. So that's awesome. That's awesome. What kind of training do you like to do? Like, you know, everybody has a niche in the fire service, whether it's search, hose, ladders, like what's your go-to on training?
I mean, I think anything where we're testing like SCBA confidence, kind of dexterity, doing things in like, you know, in optimal situations that are kind of worst case scenario. So when we actually are experiencing anything on the fire ground, that it's kind of like there's no uncharted territory, you know, so doing anything blacked out SCBA confidence stuff, like, you know, whether you're One of my favorite drills I like to do, especially if I got new guys, new guy or girl, is basically I'll get them fully kitted out in all their PPE. We'll black them out, and then we'll basically take an SCBA harness or a pack and disassemble it. So with the packs we have, basically regulator can come off, bottle can come out, and then we'll set the pass alarm off. So you're working two things. You're working kind of a sound oriented search. So they're blacked out. They have to, you know, listen to that sound, simulating if they had a downed firefighter to locate them. We'll usually put the pack in a room, so the sound starts bouncing around and can be a little bit confusing. And then ultimately when that firefighter finds the pack, and we'll mess with the harness too. We'll like tighten the straps down. We'll put the buckle in through the harness just to, so they know what they're feeling and they know how to untangle a pack. And then they'll have to reassemble it. So we'll basically put the bottle and regulator kind of within the pack. So they kind of have to do a quick sweep to find it. So yeah, we're working search, and then we're working SCBA confidence, where they're actually able to put their packs together with their gloves on, blacked out. So I find stuff like that is really, really helpful, because, you know, throwing ladders, all that stuff, super, super beneficial, super awesome. Forcing doors, you know, definitely stuff we're going to do on a regular basis. But I think the anxiety that is added when you can't see what you're doing, you're on air, there's sound. I think when you put firefighters in that scenario, where not only are we like, you know, testing their skills, but we're also testing like mental resilience and the ability, okay, slow down your breathing, you know, take a big deep breath in, hold it. Where do you hear? Like stuff like that, I think is super, super important, because I don't think people truly, especially people not in the service, can truly appreciate the anxiety and the discomfort that comes when like you're hot, you know, you're in a structural suit that like is not giving off any heat, you know, you're starting to breathe heavier. Maybe you're a little bit disoriented. Maybe you're a little bit, you know, claustrophobic. Maybe you're in a tight spot. I think the more we can, you know, expose firefighters to those situations where they're not only building proficiency, but also mental resilience, is something I really love. Because if you, and we've all been there and we've all seen it, like you go into that entanglement, you know, prop, that rage cage, whatever you call it, and you see someone that loses their cool, you just want to make sure that that doesn't happen, you know, in the real world. So the more we can kind of be masters of our mind and not let it get the best of us, I think that's a skill that I love to work on with anyone. And it's something I definitely prioritize for myself as well.
No, that's an awesome skill. I mean, everything you said, man, you hit it on the nail. Like, yes, you stretch hose, forcing doors, throwing ladders. That's all good. It's good for proficiency, technique, learning your physical abilities, limits, strengths, weaknesses. But the fact that you mentioned like this right here is what gets you. And I can 100% relate, because like I personally cannot stand like tight spaces. So yeah. Like, you know, once you get that in your head of like, oh, I don't like this, and you're put in that environment, it is a game changer to try to get yourself to calm down and focus on what you need to do. I don't know if they have that word where you're at, but like we would build mazes, like these little props that's kind of tight. You got to turn and it's dark. And like, I always hated doing that. I had like a fear of it, because I had a real bad training scar where like they shoved you in there, and then if you're not progressing, they're yelling at you. And it's like, yeah, of course, you learn now that's not the way to do it, because you're gonna have issues with that. But man, you 100% hit on now. I like that training that you guys do.
And it's almost like, and I don't want that to happen. I never want to see someone not succeed, but like, I almost want to have someone have that moment where they go to pull up their mask, or they have that experience to be like, okay, like, I'm glad you experienced that, you know? So we know when we're getting close to that it's sheer panic is the only way to describe it. Because, you know, again, if you're not right up here, scenarios that we would be able to, you know, operate in or be able to complete without having our SCBA on become very, very difficult. And one of my other favorite drills, and what I'll get to do to kind of prime the firefighter to show them the difference and kind of show them what we're talking about here in real world, is I'll get them to hold their breath for as long as they can. And, you know, most people, depending on their level of fitness, age, all that kind of stuff, most people can hold their breath 30, 40 seconds pretty easy. And then what we'll do, we'll black them out. We'll grab an SCBA. We're fortunate enough that we have the Quick Connect bottles. So another SCBA proficiency drill will do: slowly turn your bottle down, control that breathing. And anyone that deals with these packs know that you can't release them if they're still under pressure. So you basically have to breathe your bottle down until you've bled the system dry, pop your bottle out, swap it with a new bottle. So again, you're practicing SCBA confidence, efficiency, all that kind of stuff. And it's amazing, the person that, no, you know, 5 minutes ago could hold their breath for 45 seconds, panics after 10 seconds doing this drill because they know that their air is limited. So again, it has nothing to do with the physiological capacity of their body. It has everything to do with them being like, oh my God, my hand's slipping, I can't find it. And then as soon as that's gone, it's like, it's all over. So yeah, I love that. I think even, you know, all the exercise and, you know, sports I do outside of the fire service is like the mindset, the mentality is everything, man. Like the actual physical part, like maybe that's 50%, but like a lot of it is about mindset. So something that's so, so important. And that's why we need to get in the gear, get the pack on, you know what it feels like to take that last couple breaths as the mask slowly sucks to your face. Cause you know, God willing, that doesn't happen on the fire ground, but if it does, we want to know, okay, I'm feeling it. I got 6, 8, 10 breaths left. We need to get the heck out.
Definitely. No, that's awesome, man. Definitely. Definitely. You struck a nerve with me on that because it's so true. And it's so easy to focus on, all right, I want to get good at this. All right, I'm going to hammer, like I said, all these essential skills that we must be able to complete. But right here, if you can't get that right, man, you're 100% right. And with that being said, like, I want to shift it, the next topic, to fitness. And I know you're big on it. So with that being said, you know, it's very easy, like you stated earlier, to do the exercises. It's really nothing. But once your mind, once you have that notion of like, all right, I'm on rep 70 and I want to get to 100. But then your mind goes, hey, man, I'm kind of tired. It just changes it unless you shut that part of your mind off going, no, we're not tired, we're good to go, keep going. So with you being in the fire service and seeing your dad and your dad's dad, you know, in the fire department, how important is physical fitness in your opinion?
It's everything. And I think, you know, just because we're already talking about it, we'll kind of continue with the mindset piece. And I tell this with, like, you know, new individuals that I work with in a coaching capacity that are trying to get on the fire service. I'm like, do you want to be that person that shows up academy being like, can I pass? You know, I barely passed my CPAT. Like, will I be able to do it? Or do you want to be that individual that shows up and says, whatever they got, bring it on. Like, I'm ready to go. I think that's why physical fitness is so important, you know, just from a mindset and a confidence standpoint is like, you know, if I got to climb 8 stairs and then I got to, you know, fight a fire, whatever it may be, I don't want to show up and say like, oh man, I got that doubt in my mind. Can I do this? Can I not do this? I want to show up being like, I've prepared. It's not even a question of if, it's like, you know, let's do it. So I think, you know, physical fitness is so, so important for so many reasons. Obviously from a, you know, a preparedness standpoint, from an efficacy standpoint of being able to do your job effectively, and well, but, you know, also, you know, from a mental standpoint, from a mental health standpoint of like, you know, taking care of your body, you know, your body and mind are not two separate entities. They're one and the same. So I really think in order to stay sharp cognitively as well, fitness is so, so important.
How did, the Everyday Heroes Fitness, like what sparked that? What gave you the notion, hey, I love the fire service, and I believe like these things are important into making a great firefighter. So how, you know, what I usually say is what tripped that breaker in you to go, I'm going to do something.
For sure. I would say, you know, like I said, you know, when we first started talking, I've always been physically active. I've always been, you know, I've always been striving and pushing myself physically. And you know, we mentioned this before we logged on, is I found for me anyways, it was like, I had been on the job for, you know, 6, 7 years and I things started to slide, like, you know, physical fitness started to slide. My passion started to dwindle. I felt a little lost and without direction. You know, my mental health probably wasn't in the best place it could have been. And it was at that point that I was like, you know, enough's enough. I'm done not, you know, feeling the best I can. I'm done just surviving. I want to thrive. So that's when I doubled down. I was like, okay, you know, we've always been active, but I want to reprioritize nutrition. I want to, you know, get in the best shape of my life. I decided, you know, I'm going to run a marathon. So I started running and doing all these things. And ultimately, I took my, you know, myself from this person that was kind of lost and, you know, lacking passion to someone who I had reignited that fire under my butt to get going. And, you know, when I started to work on myself physically, I started to, you know, do a lot of deep dives into the mental aspect of things and, you know, understanding like things like nervous system regulation and all these things to, you know, get my mind right. And I think it was that massive swing of knowing like over the course of like 2 or 3 years, how much better I felt. I was like, I want to share this with other people. You know, us as first responders, we have so much on our plate already. We have all the stresses of life and all that stuff. And then we have the job thrown on top of it. And quite frankly, I saw it myself and you know, I saw it in a lot of people I was working with. It just seemed like people were getting buried by life and the job, and they just weren't living optimally. And it was really hard to see. And, you know, I think I'm one of those people that I feel like I can pick up on that kind of stuff when it comes to other people. Like if someone's going through a hard time, I feel like, you know, intuitively I have that sense of picking that up. And I was just thinking, I was like, you know, this is a difficult job. I don't want anyone just white knuckling their way through life. I want to do everything in my capacity and take my struggle, my hardship, and use that to educate and hopefully help other people. Because yeah, man, like, you know, it's no mystery the prevalence of mental health issues and how much more predominant it is in the first responder community. So it was basically born out of not only wanting to people, you know, people to feel better physically, but I think a big part of what I focus on and why I'm vulnerable on my platform and talk about my struggles is to be like, hey man, like this is where I was, and this is what helped me because I just don't want, you know, want people going through that. And I think, like I said, that nervous system regulation, I know that kind of when people hear that, they're probably like, what the heck is this guy talking about? But basically, you know, you can think of it as two ways, is like the nervous system, you know, there's two gears. There's forward and reverse. There's your sympathetic fight or flight response, and then there's your parasympathetic rest and digest. Us as first responders, and a lot of us are A-type personalities before we get on the job because it's that personality type that is actually drawn into this field. We're naturally more on that kind of fight or flight, foot on the throttle side of things. And then you take, you know, stresses of life, lack of sleep due to shift work, the trauma we're exposed to, you know, on the job and before we even start as firefighters. You know, people just get stuck in this go, go, go stress. You know, we see so many of our coworkers that aren't sleeping properly, all these things that are just manifestations of just being stuck in this kind of fight or flight mode. So one thing that made a huge, you know, impact in my life was, you know, doing different things, whether it be breath work, you know, exercise, cold water immersion, mindfulness, meditation to get me more back into that parasympathetic. And I think that that's so important because I think that constant, you know, state of stress drives a lot of things in firefighters from a health standpoint. So that's one of the big things that I really, you know, focus on with my clients as well, is like understanding your nervous system and how, you know, the different things we do day to day, our sleep, all that stuff impacts that.
Okay. With that being said, and you've mentioned your fitness program that you have, how could somebody reach out to you if they needed help? Because that's the thing, you know, some firemen, when it comes to physical fitness, some of them don't really know what to do. So how would they be able to reach you?
For sure. So like if they just want to go to everydayheroes.fitness on Instagram, that's kind of the best way to reach me. You know, whether it's you're looking for something in more of a one-on-one coaching capacity, that's great. But if not, I post workouts like 3, 4 times a week, and they're all based around functional fitness, mobility, things that are going to translate well to your job on as a firefighter. You know, crew workouts, things, 'cause I think working out is good personally, but there's no better way to, you know, get the energy up, build camaraderie than to like, you know, hammer a workout out with your crew. So yeah, Instagram's the best place to find me. I'm constantly posting stuff on there. And like I said, I kind of use myself as an example. I'm very open and honest and vulnerable on my platform just to be like, you know, I know it can be hard in this very, you know, alpha dominant, you know, workplace to talk mm-hmm. about these things. Like, mm-hmm. you know, imagine going to the kitchen table next shift and talking about nervous system regulation. Like, right. guys are right. going to be like, what is this guy talking about? But I think it's so, so important because, you know, breaking that stigma and understanding that, like, we don't have to just white knuckle our way through a career anymore. We, you know, we can confide in others. We can seek help because, like, that's not a sign of weakness. That's, you know, we want to be able to work a 30-year career and then, you know, leave happy, healthy, and you know, to be able to enjoy our retirement. And, you know, like we were talking about before, there's been a lot of things we've learned from the previous generation of firefighters. But I think, you know, one thing that we're doing a lot better with this generation of firefighters is being more in tune to, you know, emotional intelligence and making sure that we're not only physically, but mentally prepared. And I think that that's so, so great because, like I said, they're not separate entities. They're one and the same. So if we want to strive, you know, and thrive on the fire ground, we need to take care of, you know, what's between the ears here.
Definitely. 100%. Okay. What kind of shift work does your department, like, what kind of shifts do you guys work?
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to describe. We kind of work like a 24-48, but then we have some longer breaks within that. So basically, I guess the easy way to describe it is we work Friday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Monday, Thursday, and that just repeats. So the Friday, Sunday is the only day that we'll only have 24 hours off in between. So we'll work 48 of the 72 hours that weekend. And then we basically get a 5 off and a 7 off stretch every month, which is pretty amazing. So yeah, it's hard to describe because it's not just like 24-48. It's kind of all over the place, but basically we work every day of the week throughout the month. So it works out to be around 8 shifts a month and we work 24 hour shifts.
Okay. And how many shifts do you have? Like some departments have 3, 4.
Four. Yeah.
Four.
Okay. So for my shift, we have like A, B, and A1 and B1, which is kind of strange. Like A, B, C, D is very common.
Right. Right.
So I don't know, you know, again, that was probably a decision that was made around the coffee table 82 years ago, and it just has never changed, but you know, hey, we're working with it. My cousin, who's actually, you know, my parents this weekend, he's coming up here. He works for another department, big department in Ontario. And like, we always have to be so like, is your B1 C shift? And is your A1? It's like, it would be a lot easier for planning, you know, family get togethers if it was ABCD, but hey, we'll make it work.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. Like I said, I love finding out how other, you know, jurisdictions do things. Another question I wanted to ask you, you've been in the service for a while now. So have you seen, because I know a lot of departments are feeling it here, are you having a recruitment and retention issue as well? Or are you guys doing okay with that?
No, I think we're doing okay. Yeah, retention's never really been an issue. And recruitment, it seems to be, you know, strong as ever. And again, I'm not sure. I know just on the outside looking in and talking to other people in the space about like salary and benefits at different places, like Canada, I feel it's pretty similar across the board. And, you know, we make decent money and we have good benefits and the time off's great, but you know, depending on where you work in the States, I know the price swing can be like, you got some of the big departments, you know, the higher paid departments, they're making some top coin and some of these other cities are making like half that. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, maybe the States is a little bit more, you know, victim to that, where it is kind of very different depending on where you're working, where, you know, Canada is the same along the board, but yeah, no, I, from what I've seen and, you know, being on for the time I've been on, people seem to stick around when they get hired. So,
okay. Well, that's a good issue to have because, you know, here, with inflation and the pricing of things, like, you know, you have some that, you know, they'll go from department to department, you know, the one that will pay higher lateral transfers, you know, we have that issue. And we also have a retention issue as well. You know, certain problems within departments are causing people to leave, whether it's, administration or the department's not up to that person's standard, things of that nature. So that's kind of good to hear that you don't really, I mean, as far as you know, you don't really have that problem.
Yeah, and one thing, I'm not sure if it's different in the States, but in Canada, if you move to a different apartment, you start at zero. So there's no, you don't keep your rank. So I think and I think that was maybe done intentionally for that reason in particular. And I know some departments have actually honored lateral transfers, and they've kind of got their wrist slapped for it because like it's been this mass exodus from some of these other places because they want to work there. But yeah, like if I were to move departments tomorrow, I would make probationary wage, so it'd be a massive pay cut. I would lose all my seniority, so when it came to vacation, all that kind of stuff, like you're basically, you might as well be the 20-year-old guy fresh out. You don't bring anything over. So it's funny, I think if things were different and guys could kind of move around and maintain pay, rank, years of service, probably be a different ball game. But right now it would be a huge change to jump ship from the department you're with.
Okay, yeah, no, that because like I know here, certain departments, it all depends on their credentials, but normally, like if you want to go to a different organization, but it's in the same state, most of the time, if they do laterals, then they'll take all your certifications, all your years. You probably will have to start over depending on if you're doing like a lateral position to position. But the fact that you guys have the thing where even if it's like the neighboring department, you go back to zero, and like that would be a game changer for sure. Okay.
And like there's a handful of departments that have done they call them experience hires. Yeah, it's I think they've gotten their wrist slapped for that because, you know, if you have a place where someone's working in a city that, you know, maybe it's a little rougher, maybe, you know, the pay is not as good, and they can go to somewhere where it's like, you know, ideal location geographically, maybe, you know, nicer department, nicer stations, like it would be tempting, right? So, yeah, I think it's kind of done intentionally that way.
No, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining. With that being said, I always like to ask the guests before we part out, where would you like to see yourself at within your organization? Like right now, you're a firefighter first class. Do you want to see yourself an officer, a captain, but anything higher than that?
Yeah, I would say for sure that the one place I want to work myself into is to be in a position where I actually have the ability to affect positive change. I feel as much as I can, you know, lead by example and kind of, you know, rub off on other firefighters. Again, usually more junior firefighters by proxy. I think that's great, and that's something that I try to do, and I try to embody, and you know, be the best I can. But in order to truly, you know, say I walk away from an organization after putting in 25, 30 years and be able to look at, you know, whether it be mental health initiatives, fitness initiatives, you know, equipment, you know, policies, procedures, where I feel like I truly benefit the department, the greater good of the citizens and, you know, the staff. I feel like, you know, I want to work my way up to a position where that's possible. You know, whether that be captain, you know, platoon chief, whatever that looks like. I don't ever see myself leaving, you know, the union, leaving like the actual suppression side of things. Like management definitely doesn't seem like it's something that would be a good fit for me. But I definitely want to be in a position where I can, you know, enact positive change and, you know, leave a lasting impression. Yeah, I think the officer thing is definitely it's a ways away for me. The department I work with is basically strictly seniority based, so I still have quite a bit of time before that's an option. But yeah, I am looking forward to, you know, being able to create a bigger impact one day in that capacity.
Okay. No, I like that. I like that answer. One thing that you said that kind of keyed a question in my head, is it 20 or 30 years you're supposed to do for retirement in Canada?
It's 30. Yeah. So basically the way it works in Canada, or at least in Ontario, is it's 30 years of service or your 85 factor. So your 85 factor would be your age plus your years of service. So my math's terrible, but let's say If you are, if you get hired at 50 and you put in 50, 60, 70, yeah, I think it would be 25 years you could retire if you got hired on later. So yeah, basically people are gonna be laughing, being like, that math does not add up. But yeah, basically your years and age of service, if that sorry, your years of service and your age, if that adds to 85, then you can retire without a penalty.
Okay.
Or it's 30 years of service prior to that. So
Okay. For anybody out there, struggling, whether it's because it definitely seems like you guys, have the same issues that we're having here. So when it comes to like a not so motivated crew or individuals that don't see the job the way you do, what advice can you give to someone out there who might be struggling with that? Because you definitely hit it on the nail with, when you do this for so long, man, you might just hit that coast button, that complacency settles in, and once complacency settles in, man, little mistakes here and there can contribute to major factors at the end. So what's your advice?
One thing I'll lead with is a really, really good way to be unhappy and unsatisfied with life is to try to control things beyond your control. So if you sit at work and you mope about what other people are doing, what administration is doing, why did they buy that truck? That was stupid. This was stupid. At the end of the day, you have zero control over those facets, but you can control everything within this sphere. So the way it works for me is I don't care who I'm working with, what crew I'm working with. I can control my attitude and I can control my preparedness because ultimately I know when that call comes in, if I've done everything that I can physically, mentally, from a job training side of things, that I'm going to be able to sleep at night. So it doesn't matter what people are doing outside of your bubble, you're never going to be able to control that. So you just need to let that go right away. And I think, that is the tendency is to want to change things that we have no, domain over. But just it, for me, it's about how do people perceive me? What is my reputation? How do I sleep at night knowing how prepared I was? Just taking pride in what I do. Like I'm one of those people that like I don't care what anyone else is doing, what everyone else thinks. Like I take great pride in what I do, and I'm gonna approach things with that mindset. Just going through the motions and collecting the paycheck, that has never been in my DNA, and that's one thing that you're gonna have to understand as well is like, not everyone's like you. Although we're all like-minded enough to have found this profession, we're all very, very different individuals. And the reality is a lot of people just don't care as much as you do, and that's fine because that's their prerogative. So just control what you can, be the best, do whatever you need to do to be satisfied and forget about the rest because it's beyond your control. And if it is within your control, like you're mentioning, if it means moving to another department, if it means doing something drastic like that, and that feels right for you, then do it because it's within your control. But yeah, whether it's people, situations, whatever it may be in our life, that's another thing I've learned over my brief time on this planet is like you gotta let go, man. Because the more you try to constrict and control things, that's just an illusion. It's never gonna happen.
No, you're 100% right. I had to learn that the hard way too, especially when you're questioning yourself, why doesn't this person see the service the way I see it, or why aren't they doing this? Like, you're gonna meet all different kinds types of people. Don't add any more stress on top of a really stressful job. So it took me years to see that, talking to different people that are like, hey man, the best way, and you put it, was the way I learned it. Control what you can control. Other than that, who cares? So that's pretty much what I do. I do me. I make sure I hit all my checkpoints when I show up on shift, physical fitness, some sort of education, whether it's a YouTube video, listening to a podcast, reading a book, something, and then running calls, being present, being available for the community that we said, yes, we will serve you. So man, you couldn't have said it any better, man. Thank you.
For sure. No, 100%. And it's one of those things. It's like, Yeah, you're just setting yourself up for disappointment if you just expect everyone to operate like you do. And don't get it twisted, man. It's there's great surgeons out there. There's surgeons that just show up and do what they gotta do. There's great chiropractors, there's great chefs, there's great bus drivers. Like, you know, it's not different when you leave the fire service. So, you know, don't get stuck in that mindset of like, you know, come on, like we got to be better. You know, we're expected to show up for people. It's like there's people that have a lot more responsibility that, you know, probably care even less. So, you know, don't lose any sleep over it.
No, for sure, for sure. Mitch, I really appreciate you, man, accepting the invite, coming on here, dropping some gems and nuggets and some knowledge for people. I mean, I loved hearing your story. I loved hearing about you and your dad and how your mindset pretty much plays a huge factor in everything you do. So I really want to say thank you for accepting my invite, man, coming on and speaking the word on this.
My pleasure, man. It's one of those things. Every time I hop on one of these things, it's like when you find a like-minded individual, we could sit here and talk shop, talk fitness, talk mindset all day long. Because you know, when you surround yourself with like-minded individuals, you know that's when great things happen. So it's been an absolute pleasure, man. And I can't wait to continue to follow along. I've been loving all the episodes before this, and I can't wait to see what's in store for the future.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. You enjoy the rest of your day.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.